hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 45 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast alongside your hosts, Scott and Holly.
Hello.
Morning, Holly.
Morning.
You raring to go for this one?
Yeah, ready.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, this was a show that you actually picked.
I know.
It's been a while since you've brought one to the table, and it's not really like, I'm saying that like it's a dig. It's not a laziness thing. It's just, if you're saying, oh, we need a shorter episode, I'm more than capable of going, okay, well, these episodes tend to be a bit shorter, so let's pick one of them. But you came right out of the gates and picked this one. And what episode did you pick?
I picked an episode of Raw.
Which specific? There's been a lot.
Yeah, I know. The 11th of July, 1994.
Okay.
Specific.
So we're going right back to pretty much within the first year or so of the inception of the show. Mm-hmm. What was it about this show? How did you, like, land on this one specifically? Because it's very specific. It's not
Isn't
like it's
it?
The second Raw ever, which I could kind of understand based on what we've done elsewhere. So what made you go for this?
This came about from the last show we watched, I think, when I was doing a little bit of Googling whilst it was on. And we know I have, I don't know why I've said this, I don't know why. We know I have a problem with X-Pac, whatever his name is, 1, 2, 3, kid, everything.
Six.
Just, I have a real issue, and I don't know what it is. And I was Googling, and then I went on my trusty source of Wikipedia.
Yep, everyone's friend.
And it said that one of his matches against Bret Hart was rated by, I don't know who, but was rated as being one of the top Raw matches to date. So,
were you unintentionally throwing a bit of shade at Dave Meltzer there, or
no?
Because it just didn't specify who
it
rated
didn't specify.
It. I'll be honest with you, I've only seen clips of this match prior to watching this show, because I've seen all the big events, pretty much like your pay per views, etc., etc. But the Raws, I didn't have access to Raw at this time in my life, so I would have been watching at the time as a kid. But it was, like I said, whatever big events came on Sky One, pretty much. So I didn't. This wasn't one that I'd seen in full, so it's always quite nice for me to be able to see something in its entirety that I hadn't up to that point. I was aware of the match, so I had expectations.
Okay.
And I know for you, we have this conversation every time about what were your expectations for it. You'd already seen that people have been giving it fairly rave reviews, so I imagine that kind of, because you know what the aesthetics were going to look like for the most part. You'd seen the first Raw, so you kind of had a feel for that that atmosphere. Did you think, right, we could have another 5-star contender here? What?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay,
I'll be honest
fair.
As well. Especially for me, this was more of a 1, 2, 3 kid, X-Pac sort of like retribution attempt here. Like me trying to be nice and put the olive branch out.
Yeah.
I think that was my only
expectation. I quite like that as an approach.
To see
if you can suddenly go, do you know what?
Yeah.
There's some redeemable qualities.
Exactly.
But we've mentioned this about X-Pac before, is that he's a very divisive figure. It's weird because in many respects he's, I don't want to say vanilla because that sounds really rude, but he's not like a big main event star. Mm-hmm. He's not a notorious dickhead either. So you'd think he'd go under the radar more, but he generates a lot of what's termed as X-Pac heat, which is where people just boo him because they don't want to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite unjustifiable in many ways. But a lot of people,
my annoyance to him is totally, I don't know why it's there. It just is a thing.
Okay, so this is going to be what I think it is for me personally, because I don't have the same dislike of him as a cat. And we're not talking about him as a person, you know.
No.
We're talking about what
character,
we see as a wrestling character and what he does in the ring. It stems to me from the 1, 2, 3 kid, where he looks a dweeb.
Okay.
And in a world of professional wrestling, you've got to have a bit of edge about you. Not the wrestler.
Okay.
And not the U2 guitarist either.
Okay.
But you have to have a little bit of a
something.
yeah, the ironically, the X Factor to kind of make you stand out and give you something a bit more. Whereas he has never really had that for me. He's athletic. He, you know, he was a bit of ahead of his time in terms of the, certainly the WWF, but there's just something that doesn't land there for me, and it's because I look at it, and I'm very well aware this isn't the case, but I look at him and go, I shouldn't look at you and think I can kick your ass.
Right, okay.
And I'm not saying I could, but that's kind of the, when you look at the 1-2-3 kid and even X-Pac, you go...
At that time as well, you look at everyone else that was about and they were all big.
Yeah, like... but I never get that feeling when I looked at Rey Mysterio, and Rey Mysterio is even smaller than X-Pac. That's what I mean. So there's something, but Rey Mysterio's got like a undeniable charisma. That's it. He doesn't have the charisma. He portrays like he's got the charisma with like the tongue out, crotch chopping and stuff like that. But anyone can do that. But I don't believe it. Okay. I don't believe any of that stuff from him.
Okay.
And again, it sounds like we're really, I'm specifically really digging in the boots here. And I'm not, because I'm not saying I wish he was never a wrestler.
Yeah.
But for me, that's what it is.
That's what's missing for you.
So it'll be interesting to see if you're, perspective of his change or of him changes, but I I think you'll go right, my prediction, okay,
sure,
after you've seen this match you'll go, yeah, that was a good match. Well, next time we see X-Pac we'll go, fuck's sake, he's here again.
Okay,
so I think you'll accept that this is a good example, but it won't change your overall opinion of the wrestler. So I guess we'll find out. So the date, as you said, of this show was the 11th of July 1994. It was taped on the 1st of July 1994. This was still the era of Raw where they were alternating live and taped. The venue was the Fernwood Resort in Bushkill, Pennsylvania. And the attendance on the night, I want to say paltry, but it's a bit rude because that's basically, they maxed out the venue anyway, was 1,600, which is still miles above what we saw on the initial episode of Raw in the Manhattan Center. So we've kind of already gone over the background a little bit here. So I've asked how you landed on the show. You've already basically detailed that. And I've already commented on the fact that I haven't seen the show its entirety. And it's always interesting with the matches from this era to see if they've aged well. Because at the time, you might look at it and go, wow, this has blown my mind. I've never seen anything like this in the WWF. The reason why I've got a little bit more faith in that not being the case is because at WrestleMania 10, which was the same year as this, this is only 3 months after WrestleMania 10, you had the ladder match with Shawn and Razor, which got 5 stars. We had Bret and Owen, which I gave 5 stars. So it's in an era where we know that the matches can be fine. And I think truly great matches can... They're timeless, is what I'm trying to get to. So will this be considered in that pantheon? There's word of the day for you. So the show opening. The show opens with a video package voiced by JR of the 1-2-3 Kid and his fairy tale like story in the Federation so far, starting with his upset win over Razor Ramon in 1993. And I'd be honest, I thought that was the one that you might have picked for the show.
Oh.
Mm. It's not as good of a match, but it's still not bad.
I didn't know about that, you see.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to this and another time. Other such victims of the Kid's streak are shown, such as Ted DiBiase and Nikolai Volkoff. And it's also did you just fist pump about Ted DiBiase? You really don't like him, do you? What is it about him that you don't like?
He plays that character so well.
Yeah, it's good.
I hate it. He's so smug. What's the word? Smunty.
Smunt.
I hate that.
Yeah, a smug. Ugh. And then I'll let you guys use your imagination.
He plays that he played that character so well.
And yeah, as a kid, he was my favourite villain. He was the person I loved to hate.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Because the music, even, I know you're not a big fan of the entrance music. But for me, I still love that now.
Okay.
It's so good. It's a timeless bit of music, in my opinion. Timeless seems to be the theme so far of the day. It's also noted that he was a former tag team champion as well. Did you see who he was tag team champion with?
Remind me.
Spark Plug, Bob Holly.
Oh, no.
Yes, the future hardcore Holly, when he had like a dirty mullet type looking NASCAR gimmick. Having earned the title shot, we see Ted beside himself with rage. Mad to think that in 1994 that beating Nikolai Volkoff mandated a WWF title match, but here we are. It's the world that we live in at this time. JR talks about the match against the WWF champion, Bret the Hitman Hart, and if the Cinderella story will continue. We're now taken to footage from the Hall of Fame ceremony where Bret had some prophetic words where he said that pound for pound, the Kid is one of the greatest wrestlers he's come across and he looks forward to following his career.
I really like that.
Bret gets a bit of a bad rap in the wrestling community. Not in as a whole, because I think most people say he was actually a very good wrestler, but he's got this kind of axe hanging over his head that he moans about everything. And a lot of the time, he moans justifiably about things. But at the same time, he's always, if he thinks something's good, he will always say it as such. So for him to say something like this about the kid, especially at this time,
yeah.
I don't think it was a storyline purpose either. I think it was just he genuinely felt that way about the kid. And if I'm the kid and sat in the crowd and I hear that, I'm absolutely going, that's fucking amazing. So that's great. Where are we from here? Following the conclusion of these words, we get the original Raw opening package, which transitions to the live arena. And yes, Holly, the sirens are still very much in full force in the summer of 1994. I hate
these stupid fucking sirens. Turn them down.
What do you think the purpose of it was?
To be annoying.
I think it was just, I genuinely think it was like a, attention, attention, look at us, look at us, look at us.
Maybe, I just, trying to then hear what people are saying, because this is my next note, is ridiculous with that noise going on in the background. Yeah. Do you know what I'd rather? I'd rather fucking whistle man get back and just blow your whistle every now and again in the background.
No.
At least you'd drown it out.
Holy shit. Siren.
Imagine how loud that was in person as well. It's loud on telly, so imagine how loud that would be in person.
You say loud on telly?
Yes, I did.
Brilliant. Love that.
Thank you.
I am shocked. Okay, right. So you'd pick whistle man over the sirens, okay?
Yeah. What about both, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Right, let's see how much this hatred of the sirens goes to scale it.
No.
So, we've got the sirens as a comparison. We already know that beats out Whistleman. What if Whistleman came out with someone with a megaphone?
No, you can fuck off.
Both of them together?
No.
So the sirens. Okay, so yeah. So it's megaphone.
It's that fucking
sirens, Whistleman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I hate all of them, let's be clear. But the sirens really fucking piss me off.
Yeah, I. Okay, so I agree. It is noise. Yes, it is noise. I think, like I said, other than just reading or trying to get, like, oh, attention paid, I think it's trying to symbolise chaos. Like, oh, it's unpredictable. It's going to be chaos. It's crazy. That's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, I don't see the benefit of what it serves.
No.
So, yeah, I certainly understand where you're coming from. I'm not a fan myself. JR welcomes us to Bushkill, Pennsylvania and to Monday Night Raw before introducing a certain broadcast partner which will have made Holly jump for joy. Holly.
I'm so freaking happy. And I had no idea.
Macho Man back on commentary.
So happy. So damn happy. Honestly.
Welcome back, Jim Ross, to the World Wrestling Federation. Ooh, yeah.
It's how he kicks off the show.
Oh, that man.
It's something else. We've got a lot of Savage in store this morning,
makes
is all I'll say.
So happy, especially because I didn't expect it.
And no, I did expect it, but I forgot. Because when I saw JR, straight away that threw me off. Because in the early Raws, I'm used to having Vince and Savage. So when I saw JR, even though I knew this wasn't the case, my brain went, King is going to be with him.
Oh, okay.
So when I saw Savage, I went, oh, yeah, of course. Because he was still there. And then it wasn't long after this that he then bounced.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But this annoyed me then because I was like, let me listen to him. But all I can hear is that stupid siren in the background.
Oh, don't worry. We get some Savage comments as we go through the show. We see a ring card girl walking around holding a sign that reads, Raw, really awesome wrestling.
Mm.
Cool.
Mm.
JR goes into a big sell for the WWF title match later in the show and asks Savage, as a former three-time WWF champion himself, what must be going through the kid's mind.
Totally nervous all inside his body.
Is the words of Macho Man.
He's probably not wrong.
No, yeah. Again, I can only apologise for what I'm going to be doing in this episode. They're not going to be good. Some will be better than others. He also goes on to say that all the pressure is on Bret the Hitman Hart, as Kid has everything to gain and nothing to lose. Very fair point.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He's taking his fucking sunglasses off.
I know. Means business.
He continues to do a good job of getting across the stakes involved in this match, but does have a habit of turning his head away from the microphone, as I guess he's used to someone holding it for him.
Because
he's got his hand in front of his chest, and then as he's talking to JR,
his head tilts.
He looks towards him without bringing the microphone with him. So I can only assume that's because of that. And we've seen where, like, the person holding the microphone for him has had to basically give him a reach around to follow him as he's spiralling on the spot. Now, Holly, I can honestly say, I did not see this match kicking off the show.
I've literally put, oh, we're starting with this. Is this isn't a main event then?
It is. So we've seen this in Saturday night's main event as well. What is considered the main event isn't the one that goes on last. It's either the beginning or the middle. So the only thing I can think as to why they would do that is to ensure that it's given enough time so they don't have to cut anything off.
Yeah, okay, fair.
But what I would say as well is with it being taped, just cut bits of the rest of it off and still have that go on last.
Yeah.
Personally, that's what I would do, because what actually ends the show is a thumbs down from me. So this, when this came out first, I was like, okay, well, we're going to get half the show, because I knew this was going to go 20 minutes. There's no way this wasn't going to go a lengthy period of time. So we're going to find out exactly how good that match was right off the bat.
Ooh, okay.
We got the 1-2-3 Kid versus Bret the Hitman Hart for the WWF title. I am going to ask one thing about your expectations, because you said they weren't as high as, you know, thinking it was going to be an all-time classic. Did you think we'd see a lot of high-flying moves with the Kid being there, or did you think he'd have to... Okay, that's fair enough. So looking all of 12 years of age, 1-2-3 Kid makes his way down to the ring. He looks focused and doesn't take any time to pander to the crowd. He has business to attend to. Howard Finkel is drowned out by the fans as he announces the challenger. Then the guitar bins... The guitar begins to shred, and here comes the WWF champion in all his glory. The camera runs up the aisle to meet him, which is just fantastic every time. And we see Bret high-fiving all of the fans. Solid look, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the Hitman.
Absolutely.
One thing I have noticed about Bret is when he enters the ring, he does something that I call the division sign, or the plum partition. He sort of bounces crotch first off the middle rope. And other than it being slightly different, I'm unsure why he does it, but he does it a lot. So as he'll step through the ring, as he goes to kind of bounce under, he'll bounce his bollocks off, hence the plum partition and the division sign.
Right.
And he's the only person I've ever seen do that.
Never noticed that before.
It's all you'll see now.
Yeah.
You're welcome. A brief pyro display goes off from the rig above the ring, and the arena lights dim to allow a few pink spotlights to give a nice hue to the venue.
Mm.
Really good aesthetics here, all around actually, I quite like that.
Yeah.
As the lights return, Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart are stood on the ring apron, taunting Bret, who has to be restrained, kind of, from getting at them by the human man-witch, Earl Hebner.
Of course.
When you saw Owen and Neidhart there, did you think, oh, are they going to factor into the proceedings?
Yes, of course I did.
I'll be honest, when I saw them there, I was thinking, they can't really get involved for it to then be considered that good of a match. I'd like to think it was just the two of them going at it. We hear Owen call Bret a scaredy cat, but he and Anvil are escorted backstage. I love Owen, he's brilliant. Hebner raises the belt into the air, the bell sounds, and we are underway. Savage.
He's only a moment away from realising his goal of all time.
Wow.
That's a gorilla monsoon. He is only, I'll read that again for anyone that, you know, had to take their headphones away from them for a moment. He is only a moment away from realising his goal of all time.
His all-time goal.
There it is.
Yeah.
The two men shake hands as a sign of respect and they lock up. Quick arm drag from Kid gives the champ a momentary pause. Greco-Roman knuckle lock is briefly engaged and broken before it's locked in again, and Bret transitions to a wrist lock. Very speedy counter by Kid reverses the position and Bret falls face first on the canvas. Bret is now on his back and Kid retains an arm lock. Hart is looking to roll this way and that to escape and eventually does with a body slam that Kid kips up from.
Very nice. Very nice. A nice start for me. That's quick moving. That's what I like.
Let's go, Bret. Let's go, Bret. Chant starts up in the crowd. They lock up once more and Kid has a side headlock before transitioning into a hammerlock. Bret reaches back and looks to snapmare free, but Kid rolls with him and keeps the hammerlock in place.
Nice.
Yeah. Top wrist lock again, but Bret manages to whip his way free and drops the challenger with a back elbow. Snapmare takedown and a reverse chin lock is applied. Kid manages to regain his feet, shoves his way free, but is dropped with a shoulder tackle. Dropped down by Kid and he leapfrogs before monkey flipping Bret into the air and onto his back.
Very nice.
Kip up by Kid, who whips Hart but finds his kick caught before connecting with a Van Damme-like enziguri counter.
Mm-hmm.
Spinning back kick that follows lands and Bret is sent over the top to the floor. A banner comes across the screen informing us that we'll be back shortly. When the action resumes, we see Kid has an arm lock on the champion, who is face down in the middle of the ring. As Bret is trying to regain his feet, JR asks Savage if he thinks we have seen the last of Owen and the Anvil, and he responds with,
I don't know. How about that for a direct answer?
I've literally just put, I don't know why, but I love it when he just says, I don't know.
And JR goes, well, all right. Like, he doesn't know where to do that. Brett looks to free himself with an arm drag, but Kid holds on once more, keeping the arm lock in place. The hitman frees himself with a whip and drives all the air out of the Kid with a big knee to the gut, flipping him over. Brett with a stomp to the abdomen, and he scoops him up for a body slam before hitting a leg drop. Backed in the corner, Brett hits two very stiff-looking European uppercuts, the first sending spit flying into the aisle. I like that kind of aggression touch to it, because it shows them, or shows Brett specifically, going through the gears. Because if we're thinking about it from like a story arc, as it were, Brett is the technical wrestler. Kid has shown that he is keeping pace with Brett in that. Yep. Brett's frustrated, so I'm going to go through the gears now. I'm bigger than you. I'm going to hit you harder than you can hit me.
Yeah, sure.
Makes sense. A third one lands and Savage shouts, solid as a rock! So clearly Macho Man is having a very good time indeed.
He's having a lovely time.
Well, clearly solid as a rock, apparently. Savage also proffers that after the last blow, the Kid is now 7 feet and 4 inches tall. A fourth uppercut lands and Kid falls down face first. Brett uses his knee with Kid's head on top of it to stamp on the ground. Big elbow to the back of the head drops the Kid and a second follows. Swinging neckbreaker gets a 1-2, no, Kid kicks out. Reverse chin lock is applied by the champ, who breaks the grip to drive the point of his elbow into the top of the head. Face first into the buckles goes the challenger before he is booted once or twice to the midsection. Another ferocious uppercut lands and Kid is either trying to fire up or having convulsions, I don't know which of the two. Strong Irish whip into the buckles has Kid smash into the canvas off the impact.
I didn't like that.
Why?
It looked how it was meant to look, I think, which I think also warranted the reaction of, ooh.
Yes. Okay. Well, did you like touch at your
a
neck?
Bit, okay. A little bit, because okay. I was like, oh, it does look like he's a bit ragdolled, and I was like, oh no.
That's good though. Like you said, it works. Yeah. That was the intention.
Exactly.
Strong Irish whip as he bounced off. Savage informs us he's taking off his sunglasses again so he can actually see what is happening. So he's been calling this match blind.
Very good.
Very he good. Is. Well, he hadn't annoyed me at this point. There's a bit later.
I think I know. I thought it was funny.
Oh, you know that impression's coming.
Yeah? I thought it was hilarious because I knew it would annoy you.
Thanks. Appreciate that, chick. Kid ducks to avoid a back elbow from a whip and connects with a crossbody that gets him a near fall. Big headbutt by Brett and Savage is going off on how anyone who thought Kid didn't have a chance shouldn't think again. Was pretty much word for word what he said. So just don't think, basically, if you doubted him. Corner whip by Brett, but his challenger awaits his follow-up and looks for a sunset flip. Brett has hold of the ropes, though, and drops his knees down to secure a pin of his own for a two count. Nice. Kid looks to counter from a whip with a crucifix pin, but Hart prevents that and hits a variant of a Samoan drop. Brett hooks the leg and the referee counts three. What? The hitman's music plays, but he's annoyed. And why's that, Holly?
Well, this really confused me, because I literally was like, it can't finish like this. His foot's on the ropes.
Yes, Kid's foot is on the ropes. The champ pulls his hand away from Hebner and points to the appendage on the bottom rope. Earl Hebner is indicating he didn't see it, so couldn't call it, much to everyone's complete lack of surprise. Now we have Tim White hit the ring to confirm.
You hate him so much.
I don't hate him. He's just like a buffoon.
Of all the people to do it, of course it would be
him. Of course
him.
It's Earl Hebner.
Of course.
Now we have Tim White hit the ring to confirm that what Brett is saying is correct. I mean, the man had nothing to gain from lying, but why the fuck they chose when to do this and not when to do this, I don't get it. Because there'll be matches where this shit happens all the time.
Yeah.
Refs don't come out and go, oh, actually, mate, you missed this. Like, start like, again.
What's it called? The VAR?
Yeah, it's basically
it like,
VAR for...
I'm going, yeah, we all saw it.
So, yeah, this whole second ref sees it and runs out and tells him is beyond me. Does that mean that each time this doesn't happen, even the referees in the back can't see it on the monitors?
No one's watching backstage.
Exactly. Maybe it does.
Maybe they're all too far away and they go, oh, by the time I run out, it'll be like 5 minutes.
They're all wearing Savage glasses backstage and they just can't see with them on. So
we need to put them on roller skates so they can get out there quicker.
Could you imagine that?
Like Starlight Express.
See, I was imagining it like one of those old-fashioned diner things. So they're wearing little pinnies and coming out with a tray.
Hold like a little mini TV screen so they can watch the VAR.
Yes. After,
you know what? Actually, I'm here for it. Yeah, same.
After a bit of discussion, Earl goes to Howard Finkel, who confirms that at the request of Bret Hart, this match will continue. We head to a commercial break. My voice nearly left me there. We head to a commercial break, and when we return, instead of the ring, the camera is trained on Macho Man and JR. Savage is pantomime clapping, and JR sends us back into the ring. Everything he does.
I fucking love him. He's so funny.
He's not clapping. He's
so funny.
We're now shown a double feature, which my notes hate, by the way.
My brain hates it, so.
Of Kid hooking a jackknife pin attempt when Bret wasn't ready to continue and nearly ended it all.
Yeah.
Back to the live action, Bret hits a butterfly suplex and makes the cover for a two count of his own. Reverse chin lock reapplied by the champ, and Holly, can you please do those honours?
He's asleep. He's awake.
Kid's arms limply flail. Yeah, that's right. That's a
limply flail. It sounds wrong.
It does, yeah. Right. The challenge. Oh, no, I've lost it. Kid's arms limply flail away, but he does slowly make his way back to his feet from where he elbows free.
I did like his switch of arms, actually, weirdly. You know, when he's like,
oh, yeah.
The hold, the other arm. I actually quite liked that.
What he should have done, though, because that arm technically dropped. What if the ref didn't see that and called it again?
Well, another one's ready to
Tim
come
White
out
comes out on his roller
again.
Skates. I just pantomime roller skating there just in case anyone's interested. The challenger hits the ropes and blocks a hip toss attempt before countering into a backslide pin for the 1-2 note. Bret connects with a quick elbow once more to the back of Kid's head before hitting a measured leg drop and hooking the leg for another near fall. Kid is wobbly on his feet and Bret drives him into the canvas with a DDT, and this only gets a two count as well. The hitman is taking his time now as he hits a deliberate body slam, climbs the middle rope and jumps right into a raised boot that sends him tumbling head over heels. Hart with a kick to the ribs, but he misses a clothesline and runs straight into a spinning kick from the Kid that floors him. Both men struggle back to their vertical base. From the corner, Kid counters a charging Bret with two kicks to the gut and unloads with a few high kicks before connecting with a spinning kick to the head. Irish whip into the buckles and Kid follows in with a beautiful drop kick to the face, causing the champ to slowly fall to his knees and then onto his face. That was really good, that.
It really was.
Much like he did against Razor, Kid climbs to the top rope, but instead opts for a spinning cross body that connects for the 1-2 no. I thought he was going for a moonsault, but he does just kind of do a turning cross body, doesn't he?
Yes. Don't they call it a moonsault, though?
I don't know if they do. I think he said, JR said something more crossbody related, but I don't think he used the word cross. I think he said press, spinning press or something like that. Incredibly, the challenger hits a power bomb, climbs the buckles again and connects with a top rope leg drop. 1-2 no. Bret kicks out again and JR is doing a great job on the commentary team, I have to say. Even Savage is doing fine, I've put here. That changes later in the show.
That's praise from you for Savage on commentary.
I love Savage, but commentator he is not.
I freaking love him on commentary.
The reason, and I think I might have told you this before, the reason why I don't particularly like him on commentary is because he detracts away from what I'm watching. So I get distracted with what he's saying, and I'm like, what the
See, it's weird for me because we know I don't listen to a lot of the commentary because I can't focus on two things at once. But weirdly for me, his voice in the background added on what I'm watching, fine.
Yeah.
Mainly because he's not actually talking about what is going on. He's usually just giving like little tidbits of just savage-isms.
Yeah, I just imagine he's doing lines and then just shouting out whatever comes into his head at a certain point. Incredibly, the challenger hits no done that. Clothesline by Kid sends Hart to the floor and he is up top once more. Kid throws himself at Bret with a senton but only glances him and splats back first onto the floor hard. And does anyone else make the sound like X-Pac/123Kid when he hits the mats back first? It's always the same. I don't have anything that I can do it, but it's like a wet splat sound.
Yeah.
And yet everyone else will go, oh, that sucks. But because he's so relatively slight in comparison to the rest, I'm like, oh, he'll be up in a minute.
Which he was,
several times, in fact. The hitman rolls into the ring first, and Kid is up on high yet again, launching himself with a senton bomb but finds no water in the pool. With the challenger motionless, Bret looks to lock the sharpshooter in, but as he goes to turn him, Kid is too near the ropes. Big European uppercut by Bret, and he lifts Kid onto the top buckles and proceeds with a superplex attempt, but finds it countered as the challenger shifts mid-air to land with a crossbody. Hook of the leg, and we get the 1-2 no, yet another kick out. Kick to the chest by the Kid, and he whips Bret into the buckles but misses a high-flying arsehole. Didn't know what to call that. It's like poetry in motion without the poetry in motion, but he would have hit him basically.
He does it without the...
Yeah, but it would have been, he would have hit him basically with his rusty sheriff's badge, bless him. The challenger hits the canvas hard and Brett follows up with a running bulldog. Now the champ is going up top, but finds himself press slammed to the canvas. Kid's turn as he hits the top and takes flight, but Brett steps back and catches the legs, locking in the sharpshooter. Kid has nowhere to go and taps almost immediately.
Yeah.
With JR and Savage standing on their feet applauding, the former says it's one of the greatest matches he has ever had the pleasure of seeing. The hitman is patting Kid on the back and talking in his ear, probably telling him what a hell of a job they both just did. Brett applauds Kid and helps him to his feet, offering him a hug and words of encouragement. Both men take a turn raising each other's arm, and Hebner even tries to get involved as we shift always from one hell of an as we shift away shift always as we shift away from one hell of an opening contest.
Mm.
What are your thoughts, Holly?
I did enjoy it. I thought it was all right.
All right.
I wouldn't say it's one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Okay.
I did think it was good. The ending was a little quick, but I think that's the, as in,
I like
the
that.
Fact that he tapped out so quickly, but obviously that's the whole point. I
yes.
get that. But I gave it 3 out of 5, which I don't know. I did enjoy it though, but I just, some, it wasn't as,
okay.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I thought it was still good. 3 out of 5 to me on an episode of Raw is still very good.
Especially for this time period.
Especially considering what comes up following all of this. But, yeah, I don't know.
I thought you were going to be closer to 4.
Okay.
I didn't think you were going to go
no.
whole hog, and I don't no. think it necessarily merits that.
No, it was good.
Okay.
4 Raw.
Okay. I like the pacing of it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, we know how I feel about the commercial cutaways, but I don't feel like we missed anything necessarily no. in this one. I like the story that was being told in terms of Brett getting frustrated and then upping the ante with harder hitting moves, Kid keeping pace with it. And the only other time he tried to get the sharpshooter in, Kid happened to be near the ropes.
Yeah.
I think the jeopardy there is to show how quickly something can just go like that in an instant. So the instant tap from the sharpshooter, I liked as a finish.
Okay.
It reminded me of, well, we haven't seen it yet at WrestleMania, when Shawn jumps off at the end of the Iron Man match and Brett catches him like that with the legs and puts him in the sharpshooter to end that Iron Man match, but Shawn doesn't give up. It reminded me of that, but obviously I've seen that prior to this occasion. So I'll tell you the rating I gave it. I gave it 4.5.
Wow.
Okay.
Jesus.
The reason I would have been tempted to go higher, but the thing that actually stopped me doing that was, and it was what the 1-2-3 Kid was doing, it was going up to the top, throwing yourself, going up to the top, throwing yourself, going up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It started to be repetitious for me, and I was like, stop doing this.
I felt like maybe there was, especially for me, it wasn't just him, which surprised me, it was both of them. I felt like, looking back at my notes afterwards, all I've got is, very similar to you, like, up, top and down, uppercut, up, top and down, uppercut. Like, it was a bit, like, there wasn't much, for me, personally, there wasn't a lot much else in there. A couple of whips over the top. I don't know, I felt like with the two people here, and the what I'd read about it, I thought afterwards, in hindsight, it was more like, oh, I thought maybe it would have given more, considering what I'd seen.
I still think genuinely think it's a very good match. I do think it holds up. I don't think if I would have seen it at the time, I'd have said 5 stars, to be fair.
Yeah.
But the reasons that I gave kind of took away from it a little bit. I'm trying to think if Brett did anything that I didn't particularly like. I like the fact that he actually gave the Kid so much offense. Bret Hart never really was overly dominating the match. It was like, as he was being deliberate and methodical,
mm-hmm.
Kid would suddenly snap into life and do something that would catch him off guard. So I just thought it was really well done from start to finish, but it's not a 5-star match to me.
No.
It's very good. Very good.
I still enjoyed it. And to me, a 3 out of 5 on an episode of Raw is still very good.
And a Kid match.
Exactly. And I like the fact that he was only 22. And I was, oh, give him kudos. He
yeah.
was 22 and Brett was 38.
Compared to what we see
so
around that
considering,
time. Yeah.
Very well done.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Holly,
yeah.
Tell me what you know about Ico Pro.
Oh, God.
So I'm assuming nothing.
No.
Don't worry, I've got you covered.
Oh, good.
From Ring the Damn Bell, Vince McMahon can be considered a great businessman. He turned a relative... I've done businessman like a surname again. Businessman. He turned a relatively regional wrestling promotion and expanded it globally. He made household names out of wrestlers like Hulk Hogan, The Rock, and John Cena. With all the success that he has had some epic failures. There are a few instances that come to mind, but the first on the list for me is IcoPro. IcoPro stands for Integrated Conditioning Program and was around the WWF from 1992 until 1995. What exactly was IcoPro? It was a line of bodybuilding supplements that the WWF heavily promoted in the 1990s. They coincided with Vince's other failed project called the World Bodybuilding Federation, or WBF for short. This was a passion project for McMahon, who was heavily interested in the bodybuilding lifestyle, so he created his own competitive league for it. It made perfect sense for IcoPro to be advertised alongside his WBF. After all, it was all about building lean muscle mass and all that. Once the WBF went under, IcoPro still remained for a couple of years after the league's demise. McMahon was intent to get his WWF fans to purchase the program and become muscular. He pulled out all of the stops to get WWF fans excited about IcoPro. A banner was hung on the balcony of the Manhattan Center and easily visible on every episode of Monday Night Raw in the early days. Print and television ads were all over WWF programming and magazines talking about the benefits of using IcoPro. The tagline was, "You gotta want it." The problem was, nobody did. At least the majority of fans wanted nothing to do with it. If by chance there were a minority of people who bought the IcoPro system, there was nobody that the company could tout as being a success story. There was no before and after photos of an IcoPro user. Instead, McMahon threw his wrestlers into the mix to help promote the supplement's effectiveness. Guys like Razor Ramon, Lex Luger, and WWF champion Bret Hart all praised the products. WWF executive Bruce Pritchard said that he tried IcoPro and it tasted nasty. The powders didn't completely dissolve in water, and the protein bars, which was a bit ahead of its time, weren't the most delicious things to eat. With the IcoPro products not flying off the shelves, McMahon decided to ditch the supplements altogether. Bruce Pritchard claimed that Vince didn't lose any money with the supplements, he just about broke even. Apparently another company purchased the naming rights and reissued IcoPro briefly, but that too went under. Interesting story off the back of that. Mm. I heard Bret Hart talking about IcoPro. I can't remember if I read it or heard him talking in an interview or podcast. And he basically said that he was getting boxes of this stuff sent to his house. And he would, unknowingly to his neighbours, try and offload it on them because he didn't want it. He didn't like the stuff. So he was like hiding boxes around his neighbour's house or giving it to them as gifts. And they'd bring it back and go, yeah, no, we don't want this. He said he could not get rid of it.
Oh.
So, yes. And obviously it came around at a pretty bad time as well, about supplements when the steroid trial kicked into gear around this time. Yeah. So it was important to maybe not lean into this stuff going forward. So I thought I'd give you a bit of background on IcoPro.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, didn't know what it was. And it was just a VT of Luger in the gym. And I was like, what are we doing here? What's this?
Exactly. So when we see Lex Luger working out in a gym before signing off with IcoPro, you got to want it. You can laugh as nobody wanted it. Or Lex Luger in WWF for that matter while we're at it. We now see the WWF SummerSlam graphic appear on the screen. The word SummerSlam is blazing away on a blue sky backdrop. From here, we head to Todd Pettingale, wearing a button-up loose denim shirt with no collar that would look more fitting on the barefoot Contessa than on him.
It's like he forgot his shirt, so he had to borrow one from his mum.
Yep. Have you seen the barefoot Contessa?
No.
She's an American chef that's very kind of homely mum apple pie type stuff, and she's always wearing this kind of gear, and it just makes me think that he raided her closet, which is where you kind of went with it anyway. We see that Domino's will be delivering SummerSlam to us, but Todd spends the opening moments congratulating both Bret Hart and the 123 Kid on a hell of a match. The tickets for SummerSlam, which will take place at the newly built United Center in Chicago, are selling quicker than umbrellas in Seattle, we are informed. Fuck off. Monday.
Oh, I knew you'd hate this. I mean, I hated it, but I knew you would just hate it with a passion.
This show, by the way, SummerSlam, Monday night. Did you spot that?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you have a massive pay-per-view on a Monday?
But, not the weekend. Absolute madness. The building is so new, in fact, that Todd suspects that they'll still have plastic on the seats, just like at Grandma's house. Fuck off. The main event of SummerSlam has been announced as being The Undertaker versus The Under-Faker, if you will. Holly, this is not a topic for now. When we get to that show, we'll cover that in detail. Don't worry.
Oh, God, okay.
Todd sends us to a promo from Paul Bearer that looks like it was filmed in the steam room of a Korean spa at 2 a.m.
His camera needs a bit of a wipe down. And why does he sound like Sue from Sooty and Sweep? You know, the panda. God.
Yeah.
She's got that really high-pitched voice. Yes. It's all I can hear when I hear him.
My Undertaker!
It is Sue.
But Sue had a bit of backbone to her. Well, she would like be twatting.
Yeah, she was an aggressive lady.
She was. Is that domestic abuse? She would twat them with a rolling pin, wouldn't she? Was it a little rolling pin?
A little one, yeah.
Yeah, she was
only
twatting.
Sweet when he was annoying.
Oh, that's right then. Oh. And let's be fair, Sweet was the kind of mentally
he was
unhinged
so
one.
Sweet, I had one of him, like a little puppet of him when I was a kid.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean?
I think he's who I connected with most in all of this.
You know, if we're putting our cards on the table, he's the one that's kind of got some sort of brain damage affliction. And because he's acting a little bit boisterous and squeaky, Sue would start to act, what is this? Like Punch and Judy, we've got a lot of things to answer for as a nation in terms of entertainment for kids.
God.
So when mummy hits daddy, it's okay.
Oh, God.
Jesus. So where are we? Okay. Yet Bearer says that the Undertaker is being persecuted and it doesn't sit well with him. Yes, he can feel the vibrations.
Oh.
And when his Undertaker returns, he will wipe Ted DiBiase and this imposter from existence. Bold words.
I don't care.
Why not?
I just don't care. We've switched between you being annoyed to me.
Yeah, I love
this. This little like VT segment, I was like, Jesus, it's the longest thing ever.
Well, if you hated that, you'll hate this next bit. As Bearer looks to pretend to sink below the shot, we see an image of Crush being up next on a Raw background before we head to a commercial break. So as the little promo finishes, he pretends to melt.
Yes.
But the camera's too low, so you can just see him kind of do like it's bizarre.
It's very strange.
Second match of the night, we've got Crush with Mr. Fuji versus Matt Hardy.
A very young Matt Hardy.
Holly, can you believe your luck here?
No.
Not only do we get Crush, bruh, but the jobber opposite him on this night is none other than a short-haired, paper-round-working Matt Hardy. Yep. Matt poses like it's the 1920s, and I can't help but laugh. It's
I've seen him do that before, like, before when he started, like when he first started.
Brilliant.
It's just so bizarre to see him with short hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I've seen pictures and videos of him and Jeff when they first started out as well. But I was just like, oh my God, this episode is just giving.
Well, let's see if it does continue to give. Yeah. I'll be honest, this might be the match where I'm going to come at Savage and I'm going to come at Savage hard. Crush bows to Mr... Oh, sorry, you want to say something?
I don't know if it's now or in a little bit, though, because we know my notes are a bit dodgy, but Randy calls himself the Forrest Gump of WWF, and I don't understand why.
I did not catch that.
Yeah.
Because life is like a box of chocolates?
He doesn't elaborate. He just says that he is like the Forrest Gump of the WWF. And I noted it down because I was like, but I don't understand what the point is there.
Nobody wants him around.
I've seen Forrest Gump and I didn't really understand
I've never seen him run with calipers either. Like, I don't...
But yeah, I didn't really get it. And I wondered if you'd picked up on it. Alas, you haven't.
Definitely haven't.
I just didn't understand the correlation, but okay.
Don't worry. He catches my attention very soon in this match.
Oh, yep.
So Crush bows to Mr. Fuji before he enters the ring via leaping over the top rope. The crowd are chanting USA, which can only be directed at Mr. Fuji, as Crush is a Hawaiian, bruh, as is Matt Hardy. Well, he's not Hawaiian, but he's American. From South Carolina? North Carolina?
I want to say South, but I'm probably wrong. It's one of the Carolinas, isn't it?
It's definitely Carolina. I was hoping if I said that, it would take... No, one of them. Doesn't matter. Probably does to them, but not to me right now. Bell sounds and Crush is looking for a Greco-Roman knuckle lock, but Hardy is unsure. He's right to be suspicious, as when they touch fingertips, Crush boots him in the gut. Crush punches Hardy into the corner and whips him across, but Matt goes up and over, much to the delight of the female members of the audience. Matt beckons Crush on and he moonsaults over him just in the opposite corner. For some reason, Matt decides to spin like an excited puppy and eats a superkick for his idiocy. Or as Savage calls it,
please don't do it as many times as he does it. I know it would annoy you, which I thought was fucking hilarious.
Is that not exactly how he does it as well? Yeah, that's an amazing sound spike.
I wish you could go back to the before that and just warn people.
No.
Because, my God, they're so loud. He does it so much, though.
That's the only time I'm doing
what's
that.
What's he saying?
Goal.
Goal. Or, I mean...
I know for a fact he's saying goal. And, of course, that's because the World Cup was going on around this time in the United States.
Oh.
There it is.
Do you think he was multitasking?
No, I think he was trying to signify that, oh, look, there's other sporting events going on as well as wrestling.
Really?
And when Savage screams goal again, JR suggests we might need some decaf out here for Macho Man.
I didn't like that.
Military press slam by Crush, who casually walks around the ring for an age with Matt high in the air. And when he does slam him down, as JR is telling us that Crush will meet Lex Luger, Savage screams goal again, and he has now officially annoyed me. Fourth time, and I am officially angry, as is JR, who asks him if he's alright and asks him to come back to Earth. Macho apologises and says he thinks he's spaced. Tilt-a-whirl backbreaker from Crush connects and looks good. He places a knee on the chest of Hardy, hooks the leg, and we get the 1-2-3. Crush is your winner by pinfall. Mm. Crush is handed the Japanese flag and begins waving it as the lights dim for effect.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, it was harmless. It was quick. It was a 0.5. And the 0.5... because it was my first time that I saw Matt Hardy.
0.5 stars.
Hey!
I agree. There was nothing there to give it more than that. Yeah. Matt did a couple of aerial things. Yeah. The moves that Crush hit were good. Literally not one bad move he hit.
Yeah,
fine. 0.5 stars.
Matt was 20.
Yeah, looks it. So Jeff would have been, what, 18 at this time? Around there? Yeah.
And the only other comment I've put is that is the worst hair I think I've ever seen from Crush.
No.
Do you not?
No, I think he had worse hair when he was the Kona Crush, the Hawaiian guy, because it was the same without the face paint. So the face paint kind of took away from the hair a little bit.
Yeah.
Against Doink, come on now, behave thyself.
Don't even get me started on that shit.
I cannot wait to get a Doink episode again into the books.
No, I don't want them again.
No. Oh, that's a shame. That's it, they're definitely going to happen. So anyone that wants to put shows forth, we know which era we're looking for.
Absolute wank.
With the match over, I've got to find Double Doink from behind.
Oh, fuck off.
With the match... sorry, that's just me referencing something I've got to do later. With the match over, we're now shown a promo package of Lex Luger highlights as they discuss that throughout his illustrious WWF career, one goal has eluded him, the WWF title. And people caring. In order to reach that goal, he will have to overcome his biggest hurdle to date, the 7-foot-tall Diesel, who is the Intercontinental Champion, and that match will be on next week's Raw. After this announcement, the cameras take us backstage, where we see Razor Ramon clapping his hands with excitement, and he says to himself, it's time to go to work.
I was very happy. Very fucking happy.
After another commercial break, we briefly see a ring card girl, but no time for that as we head into our next match of the night. Mm. Razor Ramon versus Barry Horowitz.
What a good wrestling name.
Holly, we've discussed in the past about how the early Raws more often than not featured established stars beating enhancement talent, right?
Of course.
Well, in the world of enhancement talent, or jobbers if you prefer, Barry Horowitz in this era was perhaps the man with the most frequent flyer miles in this category. So from my favourite source, The Sportster.
Oh, of course. They got you back on the...
They have. Hey, if I'm searching for stories and they're not paying me, I'm not paying them. But I'm just saying, I'm citing my sources. They happen to be the ones that have the articles I need. Every wrestling promotion aims to create captivating narratives that draw in the audience and keep them invested in the outcomes of matches. While the spotlight often shines on the top stars and the championship matches, the supporting cast, often comprising jobbers, plays an essential role in making those main events more compelling.
Well, that job. I knew that'd get a reaction.
No, sorry, I just need to change my seating position. That's fine. How would you go? No, it's fine. The primary objective of a jobber is to enhance the reputation and aura of their opponents. They are tasked with making their adversaries look strong, dominant, and worthy of their positions. This dynamic is similar to a dance partner gracefully leading their counterpart across the floor. The jobber's skill lies in their ability to showcase their opponent's moves and strengths effectively, allowing the fans to believe in the prowess of the main event competitors. Jobbers understand that their role isn't about personal glory or championship belts. Instead, their dedication lies in the art of wrestling itself. They recognise that without someone willing to elevate others, the storytelling and drama that wrestling thrives upon would fall flat. This selflessness and commitment to their craft are qualities that endear jobbers to both fans and fellow wrestlers. Despite being positioned to lose matches, jobbers bring a unique charisma and energy to their performances. This charisma often shines through in their entrances, pre-match rituals, and interactions with the audience. Jobbers like Barry Horowitz, who embrace their roles with a positive attitude, manage to capture the hearts of fans with their endearing personalities. One of the elements that endeared Barry Horowitz to fans was his pre-match ritual. Just before stepping into the ring, Horowitz would pause, reach his hand behind himself, and pat himself on the back, an endearing gesture that displayed his self-confidence and positive attitude. This ritual, performed with a touch of self-mockery and humour, became iconic and showcased his ability to find joy in the midst of his consistent losing streak. Horowitz's skill in the ring was undeniable. Despite the outcome of his matches, he had a knack for making his opponents look like true champions. His technical prowess, combined with a selfless commitment to storytelling, allowed him to craft captivating matches that kept fans engaged. His performances were a testament to his dedication to his craft and his understanding of the vital role that jobbers played in the wrestling ecosystem. Throughout his career, Barry Horowitz journeyed through various wrestling promotions, leaving his mark wherever he went. From his time in the WWE to his stints in the WCW and other regional promotions, Horowitz's presence was consistent. Regardless of the promotion, his role as a jobber remained constant, and his reputation for being an incredibly skilled performer who elevated his opponents followed him everywhere. One of the most remarkable aspects of Barry Horowitz's career was his encounters with wrestling legends and top-tier superstars. From sharing the ring with intense Goldberg to stepping into the squared circle against the iconic Undertaker, Horowitz faced some of the biggest names in wrestling history, including Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels as well. Barry Horowitz's record-breaking losing streak became an essential part of his legacy. With an astonishing 81% losing rate, he lost over 1,200 matches in his career. While this number might seem staggering, it was precisely this statistic that endeared him to fans. Horowitz's willingness to put others over, his dedication to storytelling, and his ability to connect with the audience transformed his record into a badge of honour rather than a mark of shame. In his interview on Under the Ring, Horowitz expressed his satisfaction with his place in the wrestling world. He acknowledged that while jobbers might not achieve championship glory or main event status, their contribution are integral to the success of the industry. He said, "I fulfilled my dream in pro wrestling. I wanted to be a pro wrestler, and not everybody can be the main eventer or superstar. You gotta have people like me." Agreed. Yeah. He became he's like the most famous jobber of this time. And to the point where I think he actually got a surprise win on someone on Raw, and the crowd went mental because they're so used to seeing him come out, lose to someone, go home. So I thought I'd give you a bit of a background on Barry Horowitz, because I wasn't sure we'd ever get the opportunity to inform you about him. And
lovely.
I thought,
yep,
this is the opportunity. And I jumped in.
Yeah.
And Holly didn't yawn. Big, or did you? And I missed
I
it.
Did.
Oh, I missed it.
But it was right at the beginning. So the story hadn't even begun.
That's fine. I'll take that as a win. Back to the show. And Razor makes his way to the ring. And I agree with JR, who says he loves Razor's entrance music.
Yeah.
Amongst other things. Speaking of milking. Meanwhile, Savage says, yeah. She's pretty. Yeah. Ring card girl, I assume, rather than Razor.
I assume so.
When focusing on the ring card girl and not the participants. With the bad guy in the ring, we cut away for 30 seconds to a Slim Jim commercial with, you guessed it, Randy Savage.
Not mad about it either, I'll be honest. Like, flip between Razor or Randy, yeah. I'm a happy girl.
I feel like as this show has gone on, he's managed to dictate more of my attention, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. Back to the ring, and with the crowd chanting Razor, Horowitz kicks the ropes in frustration. The two eventually lock up, and Razor powers Barry across the ring with ease. They lock up again, and Horowitz turns it into a top wrist lock, but it is quickly reversed, and Razor has him down on the canvas, jarring the elbow with his knee. Back on their feet, and Razor hits a number of short arm shoulder blocks until Horowitz falls to the floor, whilst retaining hold of the arm. Cheap shot in the corner by Horowitz, who connects with a couple of European uppercuts until a pair of right hands from the bad guy has him wobbling. A third connects, and then a spinning right hand puts him down. STF chin lock applied by Razor, and Barry contemplates submitting, but he doesn't.
There's a thing there that Razor does as well, where he looks at the hard camera?
Mm-hmm.
And gives it just like a, yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's the dismissive kind of,
character down to a T. So good.
Horowitz marches right into a drop toe. As a sign of disrespect, Razor paintbrushes the back of the head a number of times before releasing the hold. Horowitz marches right into a drop toe hold and Razor paintbrushes him once more. Poke to the eye on their feet. Boom. And Horowitz follows up with a knee lift and the ever deadly back rake. Ooh. Right hand by Razor and he hits him with an SOS before signalling that this one will be over. Instead of hitting a Razor's Edge, the bad guy opts for a small package and holds on for the 1-2-3. Razor is your victor by pinfall.
Always.
What? What do you mean, always? Oh, he's always your favourite, is he?
Oh, yeah. Something about him is just... His character is so fucking good.
Yeah, it is. But as a person in this, do you think...
No, we're talking about his character. That's all I'm talking about.
Right? Oh, and I'm telling you why you like him.
All right, okay.
Because he's
go.
A bit of a dickhead. Yes, okay. What did you score the match?
1.25.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going to elaborate? Or are we leaving it there? Let that hang out.
That was all right. Yeah. It was definitely better than the one before, which was Hardy and Crush.
Yeah, because it went on a bit longer.
A bit longer. There's a little bit for me. There's obviously a little bit more content in there.
Yep.
I just like it.
Fair enough. I gave it a 1-star myself. Again, just because it was a bit longer and Horowitz got a little bit more time to shine than Matt Hardy did, felt like it had a bit more substance to it, so that's why I landed on 1.
Yep.
Now, from here, we get taken to a special King's Court presentation that was filmed earlier in the day.
This is absolute shit.
We see the King in an office environment, which he informs us belongs to the Million Dollar Man, who is busy silently talking away on a phone to nobody.
It's so true. So fucking true.
Until King asks if he can have a word, but DiBiase tells him to wait a moment as he informs the person who isn't down the phone that he doesn't matter how much it costs, he wants him to buy 10,000 shares or something.
Oh, I just don't give a fuck.
I half expected a lawyer to walk into the room and say, "Oi, what are you two clowns doing in here? This isn't the circus. Get out." King says it was a good idea of Ted's to meet him away from the ring before fluffing his ego with his accomplishment in buying Nikolai Volkov. Well done. I myself would have kept the receipt on that product. King goes on to say that Ted bought The Undertaker and only a week later bought Bam Bam Bigelow. Ted is laughing all the while before the conversation turns to the Million Dollar Man trying to purchase Lex Luger.
God, get a refund.
Well, yeah, like I say, you keep the receipt for Nikolai. Jesus. Ted takes a solemn tone as he says, no, he's no longer trying to do this because he already has purchased him and begins laughing again.
Oh,
King is thrilled with this scoop after Ted says he made him an offer he simply couldn't refuse. Godfather. Deebs says technically Luger hasn't signed on the dotted line, but that's a formality. That's not going to be an issue. Because, you know, everybody has a price for the Million Dollar Man. Back on commentary, JR says he is sceptical of the whole situation and Savage agrees that it sounds like a lot of rumour and not fact. Next match.
Thank God.
Are you excited for this one? Because I fucking wasn't.
Honestly, I think because I was so confused that the main event had been first, that then I got to this and I was like, what is this?
Tell me who you were least excited to see, IRS or Ray Hudson?
Who is Ray Hudson?
Fuck if I know. I didn't
just
even look him up. Yeah, exactly. Now, this match is a main event absolutely nowhere in the world.
No.
IRS makes his way to the ring calling everyone tax cheats and that eventually they will all slip up and have to pay the price.
Okay.
Holy shit, his opponent. It's like Cousin Junior fucked himself and produced this man, Ray Hudson. Not one thing is pleasing to the senses about this lad. Poor sod. Mullet, pedo tash, stumpy, no charisma, shit gear, shit face.
Oh, he made you angry.
Honestly... Like, it's saying something when I go, you could have put me there, and at least I've been like, oh, that's something different. Whereas this is just like, get away from my children.
So funny.
Honestly, God. I still didn't know who the jobber was, I'll be honest at this point. Yeah. I was undecided. The bell sounds, and the two men circle until they lock up, and IRS quickly snatches a headlock before transitioning to a hammerlock and running Ray face first into the turnbuckles. Corner whip and IRS follows in with an elbow that lands before snapmaring Hudson to the canvas, dropping a leg and throwing him to the floor for reasons unknown. IRS shouts at the ref, warning him not to tell him what to do. He heads to the outside and just throws Ray back into the ring.
Yeah.
Why? Back in the ring, and following a stomp, IRS whips Hudson but misses with a clothesline and is caught with a sorry crossbody for a one count. I rake by IRS, who now grabs an abdominal stretch that he uses the ropes for additional leverage on. Elbow drop to the knee before a hammy stretch. Now he's talking the knee and driving his own knee into the back of the joint. After grapevining the legs further, IRS is back to holding the ropes for additional leverage. Back on their feet, and this time the tax man connects with a clothesline from a whip. Measured elbow drop, but IRS picks his head off the canvas before a count of three. Irwin, Irwin. Chant to taunt IRS, but he doesn't stop and hits a butterfly suplex before locking in an STF variant, and Hudson has no choice but to submit. A wank.
Yes, it was.
Thoughts?
It was. Also, did you notice, right, this match is short.
Is it?
It's not as short as I'd liked, but it was short.
It happened, which annoyed me.
And the amount that IRS is sweating over this guy within this match, and they're barely doing anything. Mm. Maybe he should rethink wearing a suit to wrestle.
He's a drippy, drippy man.
He's grim.
It's like a Lee Evans stand-up act.
And I don't mind a bit of sweat, but I just think...
In what context?
When he was stood over him and it was dripping over him, I was like, we've barely done anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In what context?
No. In wrestling? 0.5, yes.
Okay, fine.
0.5 out of 5.
Nope, 0.25, and I will hear nothing. I nearly gave it zero.
Yeah, I just gave it 0.5 because it was fairly quick. It's just, my note just says, just a bit bleh.
And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, that was actually the last match on the show, so technically the main event.
Yeah.
After commercial, we come back to JR discussing what we'll see next week with Lex versus Diesel, Mabel will be on the show, and also Owen Hart will make an appearance. Backstage, we're now joined by WWF champion Bret Hart, who JR congratulates, saying it was the best WWF title match he has ever seen in his career. The annoying sirens start back up as Bret says he went in there with the intention of giving the kid a wrestling lesson, but feels as though he got one of his own. He has nothing but respect for the kid, and he put up a great fight. Bret even refers to himself as lucky to still be the WWF champion. Savage now asks the threat Owen possesses
not
him.
A question. He says he's going to ask him a question. And then, he makes a statement. He doesn't ask a fucking question.
Yeah, I was being a bit generous. So Savage says he's going to ask a question, but then says that Owen presents a threat to him. And Bret says that Owen could possibly be considered a fluke, calling him a one-time incident. He says Owen having Jim in his corner doesn't matter, as Bret will have one of his other brothers in his corner, and they will see who the best in the Hart family is, and who, for that matter, is the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Not a great promo by Bret. It felt like he was stumbling for his words a little bit. You could tell he was thinking as he was talking, and he was hoping that they synced up at some point. Wasn't awful, just wasn't good. And with that, Holly,
yes,
the episode of Raw comes to an end.
Oh, good.
Good? So what did you think of the show? You picked it. Give me your thoughts.
I know. The first match, fine. Enjoyed that.
It's gone from good to fine.
Razor. Fine, enjoyed that, but that's because it's him. He could have just stood in the ring for like 10 minutes rather than wrestling, and I would have enjoyed it. Everything else was just a bit shit.
Raw. That is kind of Raw, to be fair, of the era.
Yeah.
We were lucky to get a good match, because if you remember the first episode of Raw...
Yes, I do remember.
The equivalent was going to be Shawn Michaels and Max Moon, and that wasn't as good as the match we saw here.
No.
Because it's 45 minutes view time, it's... easy enough to get through.
Absolutely.
But I did realise then when we got Bret and 123 Kid kicking it off, I was like, now I'm just waiting for the show to end.
It's your top of like the graph and then it just slides.
Exactly.
Down.
Exactly. So I knew once that had happened, we weren't going to get anything else decent in terms of wrestling.
Yeah.
So I was already mentally checked out. Now, fortunately, that match was, I think, just shy of 23 minutes all told.
So it took up over half of. The viewing time.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a, you know, minor miracle. And the fact that I rated that so highly means that to me overall the show wasn't as bad as it probably should have been.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you scored it pretty low as a show. So what did you do?
3.75 out of 10.
Okay, we're adding quarters again to this. That's fine.
I am now because I also feel like 3.5 isn't enough, but 4 is too much because really the only thing I'm giving this to is that first match.
And for that reason, I will give it a 4 because that match was half the show.
Yeah, fair enough.
So on that basis, otherwise, if that match wasn't there, God help us.
God, it would have been awful.
But you also got Savage. A lot of Savage that. And that still only gets 3.75.
Yeah, but he adds to it, but not like...
Does he?
It, for me, yes.
Okay.
But not. It's not like he was in the ring or anything. So he was there, but he added to the next segment.
Oh, yeah, no shit.
Let's add it on that.
Speaking of the next segment, Holly, we're talking about your outfit of the night. So there would be a few contenders there.
What do you think?
How many were there? And I will guess...
Three.
Okay, I know two. I'm trying to think who the third is. So you'll have Brett on there and you'll have Randy Savage on there.
Okay.
Are they both on there?
Yeah.
And the third one, who? Razor.
Yeah.
And the outfit.
A little breakdown of the outfit.
And I know who's going to be the champion, but I'll let you say it. But I'm going to guess.
I don't know.
Is that particular
means.
Gentleman?
So Randy was there, obviously.
Yep.
I've put the colours, the hat, the tassels, the glasses.
Yep.
He gave me everything that I'd hoped.
Yes.
Brett, the jacket, the glasses, yep. The wet hair, pink and black combo.
Pink and black attack.
It fails to look good. Like, it's so good. Razor, iced. It's the full gear, isn't it? The waistcoat, the trunks, the toothpick, the purple with the gold razors.
Yep,
very
good.
Good. Weirdly, I did actually say that it was tough to choose this time between Randy and Razor, purely because I feel like it's always a given that Randy will get it.
Not always. I think on shows with Jess, he'll struggle.
But Randy did get
it. Randy did get it, obviously.
Yeah.
That's who I was doing, by the way.
Oh, okay.
You're happy with that decision, yeah?
Yeah. Fine.
There wasn't, like I said, there wasn't many contenders.
Too much to choose from.
No,
fair.
I mean, if you're like kind of trying to scratch beyond that a little bit, who'd you end up kind of trying to claw for? Crush?
No.
He's probably fourth. But seriously, out of who was there, he was probably fourth.
Yeah, probably.
Todd Pettengill ain't there. No, that freak. Matt Hardy ain't there.
In his luminous green and white pants.
Ray Hudson ain't there. Barry Horowitz ain't
so
there.
It would put those three. Top three, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Because there have been other shows where it's been one and then nothing.
It's so hard in the more, like the Attitude era
yes,
onwards.
The Black Trunk era.
It's very hard, yeah.
Unless you happen to be mosh in the Royal Rumble, of course. And
perfect.
Then you're getting definitely in the shortlist, if not winning the whole
thing.
I quite enjoyed that more than I thought I was going to be honest. Because we had to do two shorter episodes. So we've gone back to one of our old faithfuls for the other one, which is we're going to be recording shortly. But this I found a relatively easy watch, even though I didn't enjoy a lot of the second part of the show.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Like
it is.
Sometimes when I watch shows and I'm like, oh, this is shit, it's a slog. But weirdly, this it was kind of like, it's shit, but it's quick.
Yeah.
So it was fine.
Sounds like sex with me, that. And I guess that brings us to the end of the show.
Okay.
Have you got any parting comments before we do the socials?
Should I?
Stay safe, don't do drugs, anything like that. Stay in school, kids.
No.
No? Okay, so do whatever you want,
do
basically. Okay, well then let's go into the social, shall we?
Sure. WinTwicePod@gmail.com.
And what can they do there, Holly?
Request some shows. Nothing with doinking it, please. Absolutely not. Everything else is WinTwicePod. So that is Instagram, YouTube, X.
Hey, you remembered.
You impressed?
Yeah, I'm very impressed you remembered it. Well
Thank
done.
Thank you very much.
And yes, that brings us to the end of another episode.
Hey.
Until the next one. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.